Millennials have soured on capitalism, and actually, in a way, that's a connection to the story we're about to do. I saw this piece, and I thought that it was really something worth talking about. It's on the LA Daily News. It was in the OC Register as well. Written by Joel Kotkin, who's a regular we've been speaking to many times. Is there a civilization war going on? And I believe that there is. Actually, Pat Buchanan wrote about this many years ago in a book called Death of the West. And it's really kind of ironic because it's Western, the Western liberal tradition. I don't mean liberal in the, you know, political sense. In the tradition of Western civ, if you will, the Enlightenment era traditions of Western civilization are collapsing in many ways. And this is something that everybody should be concerned about. Joining us right now to talk about is a professor from Chapman University, author of The Human City, Urbanism, and the Rest of Us. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Joel Kotkin. Joel, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. It's good to be here.
I love this piece. I thought it was really an interesting read and an important read.
And, you know, it was particularly driven home to me last week. I was in Beijing. And there's definitely a sense, not just in China, but in Europe and in the developing countries, that you know, liberal capitalism is sort of sputtering. You know, it's self-destructive, it undermines itself, and that the sort of more Confucian model that's emerging out of China is going to be the future. And, you know, many American intellectuals feel the same way.
A few years back, Pope Benedict, who was the pope who was too poop to pope, the one who retired.
Right.
He said that, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is pretty close. He said, Western civilization will reproduce itself or it will take a bow from the stage of history. And we have seen this happen in Europe in particular, where the birth rate is very low. And as a result, a lot of first world Western nations have had to import people from other countries and other cultures in order to support the social welfare system that they have and just to do the work that needs to be done. Germany brought in a lot of Turks. The French brought in a lot of North Africans, et cetera, et cetera. And you have a clash of cultures. You have people coming in who do not share or are not steeped in the traditions of Western civilization and therefore they don't necessarily have an embrace of it.
And the real shame and the thing that makes it worse is these people are coming, in many cases, to enjoy the fruits of, you know, the classical liberal culture that we have in the West, particularly in the United States and Great Britain. And yet many people in the media, in the academy, even to some extent in the corporate world, say, oh, you know what, you don't have to adopt our values. If anything, we'll adapt to yours.
Right.
And you know, when our, you know, and everybody in America, except for the, you know, for the Native Americans, have the same story. You know, we came, we tried to become Americans. You know, the kids wanted to speak English. They wanted to integrate. And I think that's still there. But now it's increasingly common to say, oh, no, you don't want to adopt this horrible culture. I mean, it's been a mistake since the time Columbus arrived, and I think that this is undermining the West from within. So there have been some very good books written about this, and the key thing is not to blame the immigrants and the migrants and the refugees. You know, they're just doing, you know, what makes sense for them. It's what we're doing to ourselves, and then the climate in which these newcomers come into. Where the where many of the most powerful and influential voices are saying, oh no, you know, our culture isn't any good anyway, or you know, there's nothing to aspire to, and this is undermining Western culture more so in Europe than in America, thank God. But you know, we're catching up.
We're talking with Joel Kotkin, who is a professor at Chapman University. His book is called The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us, and his piece, Is There a Civilization War Going On?, was in the OC Register and a version of it in the LA Daily News. You mentioned Columbus, and you mentioned the Native Americans, and I have been, when the city of Los Angeles, when the city council decided to strip LA of Columbus Day as a holiday, I think that this story was much bigger than people realize. It wasn't just that Columbus was toppled from his pedestal. And if you know a lot about Columbus, he's a tough putt, even by 15th century standards. But they didn't replace Columbus Day with a Native American Day. They replaced it with something called Indigenous Peoples Day. And I think that that's significant, Joel, because to me, the radicals who were behind this did not want to identify with Western civilization. To say Native American would be recognize a Colombian history, the impact of Columbus on this hemisphere. And they were making a conscious break with Western civilization. And you know, the more this happens in subtle, in some cases, arcane ways, it does chip away at the underpinnings of Western civilization itself. And this nation is steeped in the tradition, history, and law of Western civilization.
Well, and I think this is actually, and it connects very nicely to your point earlier about the young people who are rejecting capitalism, because, and I understand why they're doing it, but I think that they're also being instructed, and not just at the universities, at the grade schools. I've had young children. I have one, still in middle school, and she's the version of history she's taught, and sort of the basic understanding what comes out of popular culture is in many ways very hostile to these very basic traditions. And it's a very frightening thing, because you're going to have an entire generation that's been brought up essentially in many ways hostile to their own culture and the system that created the very prosperity that these kids are enjoying.
And I agree. I believe that it's proselytized, and in the economic aspect of it, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, about how millennials are saying that they don't necessarily support capitalism. If they came of age in the post-2008 market meltdown and they graduate from college with staggering debt and they can't get employment and housing costs, we've seen this before in the 1930s when the stock market crash took place and we were in the Great Depression. That was one of the peaks of prior to, the rise of the Cold War, was one of the peaks of socialism and even communism within America. So we've seen that before, but what's fascinating is on college campuses, the repudiation of First Amendment, the free speech rights, that people actually are growing up believing that it is wrong for people to speak out on issues if they're not speaking out from a social justice or a social warrior perspective. And this is antithetical to everything that the Western world believes in.
And by the way, quite a few people who I would definitely call progressives, who I've spoken to, are horrified by this. They understand what this is, but if kids are not taught the Constitution and not taught something about for all their flaws, the amazing wisdom of the founding fathers, and they're not taught that American history, of course, has many ugly things, notably slavery and the near genocide inflicted on Native Americans. But that's part of the story. But there's another part of the story. Millions of people leaving from Europe, leaving from Asia, leaving from Latin America, increasingly new immigration from Africa. And these people are coming to America for all the things that our culture has been able to provide. And, we're now sort of turning our backs on it, and this is particularly strong in academia and the media, and they're the ones who instruct the young people, and this is a very, very frightening thing.
I couldn't agree more. The fact that we punted on civics, that we stopped teaching civics, and we outsourced it to Jack Sheldon singing "How a Bill Becomes a Law," and "I'm Just a Bill" and "Schoolhouse Rock." It's not enough. We need to teach, I've said this many times, Joel. What we look at low voter turnout Why is anybody surprised? Who would watch a sport on television if you didn't know the rules of the game? It would be confusing and you get bored and move away. And that's what's happened in the political arena. People aren't taught how the process works, so they just feel it doesn't apply to them and they're bored and they move on. And it opens the door to demagogues who can come in and take the stunning ignorance of our histories and history and traditions and then just spin it as if, like, you know, Howard Zinn, the author of The People's History of the United States, the single best-selling history book ever published, who actually believed and preached that the world would have been a better place if the United States never existed. And that's the best-selling history book in the history of publishing.
Right, and that's exactly what's taking place, really throughout academia. And again, the scarier part to me, in many ways, is it's now seeping into the curricula of the middle schools and the high schools. I was up in Ojai this summer, and we were at a high school, and there were, you know, propaganda posters that looked like something from Cuba, you know, on the walls. And look, I'm more than happy to have the left wing and even the far left have their say. But you don't, the conservative view and the moderate view and what I would call the classically liberal view is completely excluded now. And, you know, I've had kids after the election say to me, well, my professor said the Electoral College was a creation to save slavery. And I said, well, that's absurd, because it was a device pushed by small states like Connecticut to protect themselves from big states like, at that time,
Virginia and Massachusetts. Exactly. We're talking with Joel Kotkin. Now, there's an irony that this is happening at the same time that Hamilton is this enormous hit. Both in New York and L.A. and Chicago and say wherever it plays, and the soundtrack to Hamilton has a chance to be the best-selling original cast record ever made. And the reason I bring this up, I mean, it's obvious it's an elitist pursuit because it's a very expensive ticket, despite the fact that they've made an effort to make it available for $10 and bring high school kids in, which is sensational, and they have a class and a whole nine yards, but. Once again, I have seen it a couple of times, Joel, and I'm utterly fascinated to watch our founding fathers get cheered like rock stars by audiences who then go home and in some cases trash the very notions that they're cheering. I mean, Alexander Hamilton is the guy who put capital in capitalism. He's the guy. If Wall Street has a patron saint, it's Alexander Hamilton. So all the people who were with the 99% against the 1% are spending $400 for tickets to go see the founding father of capitalism and cheering him.
It was funny because when I was in New York last time with my younger daughter, one of the things we did is we visited the grave of Alexander Hamilton, which
down at Trinity Church. Right? Yeah, I've been there.
Which is, you know, basically at Wall Street. And
right.
So, I mean, I know there are these tremendous contradictions, but I have to say, Hamilton to me was something good in that it really showed that these, you know, some of these people were, you know, courageous and far-seeing people.
I totally agree. I think it's I would argue that Hamilton, the musical, it's called Hamilton, an American Musical, that's the official title of the show, is the most important. I think it's doing for history what Harry Potter did for reading, that it is energizing young people to learn more about the founding of the country. And you know something, warts and all, you teach the real history, don't hide anything, it's an amazing story. It's an inspiring story, and it should inspire us.
And I think that, you know, one of the things that's always important to understand, and this is in regard to immigration, is America is not a, you know, for all the crazy white nationalists and all those, America is about an idea. It's not about a race. It, you know, we don't trace our roots back, you know, like the French do, to the Gauls. We have a history that is complete, you know, that someone like me, whose family came to America from Russia in 1900, can feel as much identity with the founding fathers as somebody whose family came over at the Mayflower.
And you just hit, to me, this is the critical point. And this is maybe the central animating force of this show for 20 years. My grandmother came from Ireland and worked as a housekeeper, cleaning toilets. That's what she did as a 16-year-old girl. And we've all got a path like that. Here's the change. The current wave of immigration is largely coming from countries that are not steeped in Western civilization. It could be from Pakistan or from Asia or from Africa or in some cases the indigenous peoples of Central or South America who are not steeped in they didn't grow up in the traditions of the Enlightenment. And that's the difference between Alexander Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton was an immigrant who came to the United States from the Caribbean, but he came from a British colony to a British colony, steeped in Blackstone's law and the traditions of British common law and all of Western civ. He was a child of the Enlightenment who may have been poor, but he was interacting with other Enlightenment-era figures. But if a person comes from Pakistan or from Bangladesh and comes to the United States and they embrace the founders, they can be as American as apple pie, too. But it is a bigger challenge because you're not coming from the same mindset.
But I think more importantly, it's not, because obviously, my family came from Tsarist Russia, which is about as far as you
right.
can get from founding fathers. But the thing that I think is really important is, what country are they entering? If you're entering a country where the value is citizenship doesn't matter, that America's history is basically an embarrassment, and that other more authoritarian systems are superior, well, that's not a good environment for newcomers to come to enter into. Now, maybe my grandparents and even my parents may have gotten an overly Anglo-centric and somewhat censored view of American history, but I certainly didn't. And I know that kids now are being taught about American history in many cases in a way that is extraordinarily negative. And you think about a kid whose parents maybe have came from Taiwan or came from Nigeria, and is being taught this particular version of American history. Well, they have nothing to balance it against. They don't have a grandfather who served in the Second World War who can tell them something different. So we're leaving it's the immigrants themselves who are deprived of this tremendous heritage that they adopt by becoming American citizens.
Joel, we always appreciate the conversation. Thanks for coming on and talking to us about it.
It was my pleasure.
Okay.